Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who just got the dream crab off his face and realized the first 29 episodes of Bad Wolf Radio were a dream, Adam Farmer.
Well done. Well done. I do have this ice cream pain. You feel that? You feel that right there? Maybe this episode's a dream as well.
But so 29 episodes in the past, so that means we're on episode 30.
Have we made it this far? 30 episodes.
30 episodes, and we kind of forgot to mention it, but we hit our year anniversary sometime in November, right?
Yeah, we did. It was around like November 15th-ish, I think, is when we recorded our first episode. I'm not sure when it was actually published, but yeah, it was right around there.
So we are a year old. I don't know if either of us thought that we would make it this far when we came up with the idea for this this little baby podcast, but we're no longer rookies.
I know we've gone through that honeymoon phase of the 50th anniversary. We hit our stride going through Classic Who, and now look at us. We've gone past that romance stage, and we're now back to friendship.
I don't know if like.
Analogy I've ever said on this show.
I don't know. You said we hit our stride during the classic stuff. I don't know. I don't know if that's where we hit our stride, but that might have been a little bit more of the rough patch, I think.
There you go. That was the post-honeymoon phase.
Getting through the Sensorites and the Aztecs and all that stuff. The Zarbi.
But the Sensorites were a highlight, we have to say. If we were to go back at the classic episodes, the Sensorites were a highlight. At least for me, they were.
Well, speaking of the Sensorites, actually, I don't think we had this listed to talk about, but you had kind of challenged me on Facebook with this quiz that you found online. Like, what was it? Kind of just a remembering what happened through all of Series 8 of Doctor Who. It was actually an official BBC website, right?
Yeah, it was official BBC website. Actually, looking at the quiz itself, you would have a hard time realizing it was an official BBC website. But yeah, it was a legit quiz.
And you took the quiz, and I think you felt like you did pretty well, so you wanted to brag about it a little bit.
Heck yes, especially after the last time that we took one of these and you humiliated me on air.
I don't remember this. But yeah, so you got 17, I think.
That's
out of
correct.
20, which is pretty impressive.
Thank you.
And then I took the quiz, and I was thinking, you know, I think our friend Jason Hunt, who we had on last episode, he took the quiz, and I think he said he only got 14 right.
Right.
And so I was a little like, oh, wow, Adam got 17. Jason only got 14. This must be a tough quiz. So I took it, and it was a tough quiz.
Yeah, it definitely was.
It wasn't just questions about, you know, stuff that happened in the episodes. It was like dates of, you know, when was the first Doctor, or when was Capaldi's first filming date? You know, those kind of questions. I'm like, yeah. I don't know. So I felt like I guessed my way through the entire quiz. Somehow I got 16 right. But you did beat me by one.
Yes.
And one of the ones that I got wrong was the correct answer was the Sensorites.
Was the episode that he was watching when he was cast.
Yes, yes.
What character was that?
The guy from
The Orient
Mummy
Express.
On the Orient Express. Yes. So apparently that was the episode he was watching. I looked at the question and was like, no, surely he wasn't watching the Sensorites. And apparently that was it. So that was my downfall. The Sensorites, they came back to haunt me through the window of the spaceship.
Nice. So. the wonderful little head popping up.
Yeah. Speaking of, I miss Bonnie Burton.
I know, right? I was having that thought in my mind right as you said
that. Was the last time we had her on, the only time we had her on, and I think when we had her on, we're all like, oh yeah, we're going to have you back on, and you know, that was quite a while ago, so we should reach out to her. I think we're due for another Bonnie Burton appearance on Bad Wolf Radio.
I'm up for it. Let's make it happen.
It definitely makes for an interesting episode.
Here we're saying, oh yeah, we'll have her on, no problem. But the question is she really willing to come back
Would she, yeah,
on?
would she come back on? We don't know, but we can try.
Definitely.
I will send her an email tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Makes
But
sense.
so yeah, we're back. We're here to talk about the Christmas special, which we will get to. But before we do, there's a couple news items, right?
Yeah, just very few, very few. Once again, we just finished Christmas special. They're gearing up for Series 9 already, which, are you surprised? Probably not. The Doctor Who is really becoming, at least the Doctor Who news cycle, it doesn't really hit a downtime anymore. It's once you get done with the one, you move on to the other. A few interesting pieces out there. The first one that caught my eye was Russell T. Davies gave an interview where he says that Stephen Moffat asks him to come back. At least every season, he asks him if he's up for writing another episode. And one thing he specifically mentioned was the idea of planning for the 10th anniversary of New Who. And he mentioned it's kind of odd that we've had the 50th and now we're doing the 10th. It sounds like he's willing to step back, though, and say, hey, keep on it. I'm moving on, but I enjoy what you guys are doing. What are your thoughts? Would you want to see Davies come back and write an episode?
I would love that. Yeah, I mean, I love the most of his run with the 10th Doctor, I guess the 9th Doctor as well. Yeah, I'd love to see him write another episode. I w had never even thought about, I guess, yeah, the 10th anniversary for the new Who is coming up, and I never thought about that being like a celebration type year for them. But are they talking about doing like some sort of a 10th anniversary special?
It sounds like they are considering it. I'm not sure what it's going to become, but there have been some lines dropped here and there about a 10th anniversary episode. And the question was whether Davies would be up for writing the 10th anniversary episode. I for one, the 50th, I enjoyed it. It would be cool to see if they could make the 10th happen. Would we have another chance to have Eccleston show back up? Probably wouldn't happen, but I would love to give it a go.
Well, I have a great way that they could get Tennant or Eccleston back in, and it does tie in with the Christmas special that we just watched, but we'll
I
get to that later.
think I know what you're
You
going
think I know
for.
where I'm going with this?
I think I.
Oh, what was I gonna say? Oh, yeah, was Davies the one that was talking about he had actually come up with a way to tie in the Pompeii stuff? Was that Davies?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was him. I didn't see anything about that, but
Okay.
are we still looking for that to get tied in?
I am, you know it. But no, I thought I had heard something about, Davies and Moffat had talked, and Davies had basically come up with this idea that could tie it all in. And somebody had asked him recently, like, your idea that you had come up with and pitched to Moffat, is it still plausible now that you've seen the entire season of season 8? And he said, yeah, they haven't really stomped over that yet. So the story he came up with still could work. So now if they're talking about bringing him in for a 10th anniversary type thing, you never know.
Right.
They could do that tie-in. Tennant was on Pompeii, Capaldi was on Pompeii, so we could get some kind of a crossover there with a two doctors special with Capaldi and Tennant. That'd be cool.
Maybe he doesn't write it, but maybe he at least pitches it and Moffat takes it and runs with it.
We know Moffat
That's
is not afraid to do that.
he is not afraid to do that at all. Yeah, so that was the first thing that caught my eye. The second one being that we are finishing up with Series 8, Series 9 is on its way. Are you ready for the Series 9 casting to start rolling in, the special guest stars? It sounded when it came to the Robin Hood episode, we knew that Tom Riley was going to be in that before we even knew what episode he was going to be in. We're starting to get those same names coming in. The most recent would be Paul K, which, from what I've read, he's from Game of Thrones. I don't have any experience with that. I'm probably one of the few people who hasn't jumped into it just yet. But yeah, Paul K is going to be in the 9th series. He's rumored to be someone, or at least codenamed right now, Prentice. At the end of Christmas special, spoilers, we got the notice that the next episode coming next year, or this year, I guess. Now that we're 2015, would be called The Magician's Apprentice, which I love the fact that they keep on bringing up the idea of magician with Capaldi. But anyways, so is he going to be that apprentice? Who knows? But that's the first casting that we have for Series 9.
Huh. Yeah, I guess it makes sense that we're going to start hearing these rumors. We're probably going to start hearing story rumors and casting rumors because they have already started filming. So now you have the spies in the trees and whatnot. So I guess we should be expecting some shaky cam, you know, YouTube videos soon of them, you know, catching some of this filming in action. But I'm not really familiar with this actor. I do watch Game of Thrones, and I pulled up the article and I'm looking at him and I'm like, okay, I recognize him, but he's definitely not a major player in Game of Thrones. So it's not like a, you know, Jaime Lannister or, you know, a Stark or something like that. Right. You know, one of the actors that plays them, that would be a pretty big deal, I think, if they showed up, you know, in Doctor Who. But this guy is kind of a bit player, I think, in Game of Thrones. So
he's just another scruffy, greasy haired, partially balding guy carrying a sword wearing chainmail. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. I mean, he does play a part. He does have a speaking role. He's been in multiple episodes, but not anything. You know, he doesn't play any of the major roles that people might get more excited about if they saw certain names.
Gotcha. Okay, makes sense. And then the last thing that is pretty much on point with what we're talking about this episode, Christmas special. It would seem like that this particular Christmas special was the most well-received Christmas special in the U.S. to date. So it had more viewings this year than it has any year in the past. I believe, and I'm checking the article one more time, that it came in just about 2.3 million views. And that's not only live, but also a three-day catch-up period. 2.3 million viewers on Christmas Day for BBC America, which, in contrast, it also looks like it took a dip in the UK. So a lot of people are wondering if we're going to start seeing a trend where views are decreasing in the UK, increasing in the US for the series in general, and what that means for the direction of the show.
Huh. That's interesting that it's decreasing in the UK, increasing in the US. I think maybe part of the reason for that is just that it's still gaining momentum in the United States. People are still realizing it exists. You know, it's still on a pretty, you know, it's on BBC America, which is not like a premier, you know, cable network. It's not like it's coming on, you know, HBO, or I'm trying to think one of the other ones that might be, you know, a little bit more well known. But there's still a lot of people out there that are still just now discovering Doctor Who in the US, whereas in England, everybody knows that it's out there.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, BBC America is really hard to get in a package, or at least wherever I've looked around here, you can't get BBC America with any package that I've looked at when it comes to TV. So you're probably right. A lot of people are finally starting to find, especially with a three-day catch-up period, starting to find Doctor Who and jumping on board. When it comes to the UK, it still had 8.3 million viewers in comparison to 11.1 million last year. So it still surpasses the US viewing.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to bring up to you, Adam, because I found it very interesting based on kind of our reaction to Peter Capaldi and how much we've pretty much been praising him all throughout the season. And we had Jason on, and he, you know, seemed to be kind of on the same page as us. But I've talked to some other fans, specifically female fans, and recently had started getting feedback from people that don't like him as the Doctor quite as much as we do. And I kind of found that interesting. There are some fans out there that aren't necessarily liking his portrayal as much. Have you heard any of that kind of feedback from anybody you talk to?
Nothing to that extent. The interesting that you bring it up, I was having a conversation with a family member over the holidays concerning Doctor Who. He hadn't had a chance to watch the ninth Doctor. Oh my word. He hasn't had a chance to watch Capaldi, Capaldi's Doctor yet. So we were just discussing how he looked, and my wife jumped in the conversation and actually mentioned that she enjoys Capaldi's Doctor. That said, kind of the same things that we talked about towards the middle of the season, where his personality, although we loved it at the start, it started to make a lot more sense towards the end. That gruffness towards the middle, she mentioned how it grated on her as well. So I'm wondering if that's the same idea. That being said, who knows? Maybe it is grumpy old doctor and it doesn't fit the same mold that Tennant established here in the U.S. with Doctor Who fans.
Yeah, I just found
Smith
it
established.
I just found it interesting because I guess I was just assuming, kind of, because we're in a bit of an echo chamber, I think, with me and you. you know, we both like him, so we're not getting that, you know, that perspective of fans that maybe don't embrace him as much. And so I had recently talked to three different people who all kind of had the same opinion. Like, yeah, you know, I really have been disappointed with this season, and I'm thinking about stopping watching Doctor Who because of Capaldi and things like that. And I'm like, wow, like completely opposite of how me and you have been reacting to him. So maybe we should find one of these people and have them on the show and kind of get their perspective a little bit.
No, totally. I would love that. Just throwing this out there because it's something I recently read too, that this series of Doctor Who is the most highly rated series of Doctor Who in the US, which once again, it could be that people are still discovering Doctor Who. Smith had such a great build-up. It's got the momentum going, and Capaldi was just able to feed off of it this season. So the ratings, the viewership went up this season. But, like, who knows? Maybe that's it's going to dwindle come Series 9, or, yeah, Series 9, now that everybody knows what's up with Doctor Who.
Well, let's talk about the you were talking about the ratings for the Christmas special.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Christmas special.
Let's do it.
We got our first Christmas special with Peter Capaldi. Well, our first full appearance of Peter Capaldi in a Christmas special. He did make a brief appearance in the last one.
Right.
So the title, The Last Christmas, it was the Christmas special this year. I don't know if you count that as like episode what? Like what would it be? 14?
Yeah.
Something like that. Or we just call it Series 8 Christmas Special.
I think it might be 13 because it was like 12A and 12B when it comes to the series finale.
So, and then of course the writer Stephen Moffat and director Paul Wilmshurst. This is the episode where we get our Nick Frost cameo. Not really cameo, more of a starring role.
Yeah.
Which I guess I have to, you know, it seems like this is happening more often. I was completely off on my prediction on the type of character he was going to be playing. We knew he was going to be Santa Claus, you know, quote unquote. But I was kind of saying, hey, I think he's not necessarily going to be Santa Claus, but more maybe a guy that's, you know, in a Santa costume, you know, working at a mall, kind of down on his luck. The doctor goes to help him, kind of, you know, something like along the lines of The Lodger. But no, way off. He was actually supposed to be Santa Claus.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, I loved, absolutely loved his portrayal of Santa Claus. I watched the Doctor Who Extra for the Christmas special, and he kind of, he took some time just to describe, like, when he was approaching the character of Santa Claus, this is the way that he wanted to approach him. A down-to-earth guy who really is kind of snarky, but yet still Santa Claus, and he's doing his thing and being himself. I loved that portrayal of it. I can't tell you how many times watching the episode, either a smile was plastered on my face because of Santa Claus, or I was downright laughing out loud because of things that he was saying. Caught me completely off guard, like you said. Wasn't really expecting this portrayal of Santa Claus. What does he call himself? Big Papa Crimbo? I wasn't expecting it at all, but I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I think he made the episode, really. I think if they had cast anyone else, or, you know, maybe an actor that wouldn't be as recognizable, it just wouldn't have worked as well. And he was kind of unrecognizable in the role. If you're used to watching Nick Frost in movies, you know, he's in a lot of those movies with Simon Pegg, and he kind of plays he's like the Chris Farley to the David Spade, you know?
Yeah.
And he kind of plays that role that he's not necessarily that intelligent usually, and he's kind of a bit of an oaf in a lot of the roles that he plays. And so to see him in this, you know, he's playing, you don't really recognize him that much because he's got the beard and he seems even more trim than you're used to seeing him. He did a great job. I really loved his role or his portrayal of Santa Claus.
And I loved how the interaction took place between him and the doctor. It might have just been kind of how the story unfolds and you find out a little bit more about the character, that they were on very even footing, I guess. But I loved the interactions that took place. It made me want to have a character like that within the episode, maybe to balance out Capaldi a little bit more on a regular basis. Series 9, having someone like him tagging along with the doctor, I would love it. Someone that was seemingly his equal when push comes to shove at the end of the day.
Well, the way he was portraying Santa Claus almost was doctor-like.
For sure, the confidence
and the, you know, kind of the bravado that he's bringing to the table. It was very doctor-like. I could see a doctor being very much like the way that Nick Frost played Santa Claus. And, you know, it was probably somewhat intentional to have Santa Claus play that type of a role because, in a way, the doctor is very, you know, he's kind of a fairy tale type character. You know, he's this guy that travels around the galaxy in a phone box, you know, and can go anywhere in time and space, you know, and then Santa Claus has kind of a lot of the same abilities, you know, so to have them kind of go toe to toe, it was almost like a similar situation where the doctor went toe to toe with Robin Hood, you know. They were kind of, you know, testing out each other's egos a little bit.
I'm with you 100%, to the point where halfway through the episode, I was convinced that we were going to find out that Santa Claus, in fact, was a lost Time Lord. The comments that he made, and you posted it on Twitter when you rewatched the episode, but the idea of the sleigh, when the doctor says to Shauna, "No, you've missed the most important question," or something to those effects, and said, "Beardy weirdy, how do you fit all the presents in your sleigh?" Which, to be honest, is a question that I've wondered about quite a bit when it comes to the discussion of Santa Claus in those different things that come up. How does he fit all those presents in his bag in the sleigh? And Santa Claus just replies, "It's bigger on the inside." I absolutely loved that and expected towards the end that we would just find out that Santa Claus is a Time Lord.
So I will say I wasn't completely on board with Santa Claus right away in this episode, though. Like, I know I'm singing Nick Frost's praise, but I will say the opening scene where we get Clara and she wakes up and she goes out on her roof and you have that whole scene with Santa and his elves, and I found all that pretty humorous. But the second appearance of Santa Claus, when you have the, you know, right after the dramatic scene with the, you know, the aliens and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden Santa Claus comes and saves the day, you know, and the toys, you know, come, the slinkies are coming into the room.
The slinkies, the robots.
And the little robots.
Rudolph's flashing nose.
Rudolph, like, he rears up with, you know, Santa on his back, you know, riding in to the rescue, and Santa, like, using the little clicker to turn Rudolph off and his nose flashes. At that point, I was like, okay, if this is the direction we're going with this, I'm not on board anymore. Because I thought maybe that was going to be kind of the tone the rest of the episode, which it wasn't. That was kind of a humorous scene. But, you know, they didn't stick with that kind of really cheesy tone as the episode went on. So I was happy to see they gave us a little bit of that, you know, typical Doctor Who, you know, kind of over-the-top humor. But then they reeled it back in.
You know what rescued that part of it for me? The elves. Like, their interaction amongst themselves, the one holding the balloon and the other holding the pop gun, and just kind of how they went back and forth and then went at everybody else, that kind of took me off of just the craziness that was the tangerine rolling into the room and Santa strutting in there being like, "Who are you gonna call?" And this is the North Pole. We don't want any trouble here. All of that with the robots and everything like that. The elves took my mind off of that weirdness and allowed me to still enjoy that part.
The thing that saved it for me was the fact that we find out that it was a dream. Because then I'm like, okay, if it's a dream, anything can happen. You know, even that, even Santa Claus
blowing a hole in the wall,
blowing a hole in the wall, and riding in on Rudolph, and yeah, everything that happened that scene. I was like, okay, it's a dream, so I can buy it. But did you? I guess there was a point where I was wondering if the whole Santa Claus angle was going to be something similar to what they did with Robin Hood, where they take a fictional character and they make it so he's actually real. And I thought maybe, like you were kind of saying earlier, they might reveal that he's a Time Lord. They might reveal he's just an alien that has powers that, you know, are beyond our, you know, comprehension. And so that's why he's able to do what he can do. But in some, you know, some way that Doctor Who tends to do, scientifically explain the existence of Santa Claus. Did you ever think they were going that direction with it, or were you kind of thinking the dream thing all along?
I had such tunnel vision on Santa Claus being a Time Lord that I didn't really, my mind didn't wander anywhere else outside of that. So the only explanation I was expecting was he's a Time Lord, and somehow he found himself in the middle of what we come to find out is a dream towards the end of the episode. That's the only place my mind went, but I could totally see, even with as far as the, if you think about it, it's going to happen with the dream crabs. We haven't talked about them yet, but that side of it, I could totally see how they could then do the whole explain with science Santa Claus.
Well, we'll get to the dream stuff later, but you had kind of mentioned something about the elves, and I guess it's good to point out that one of the elves was actually played by the same actor who plays Strax.
Yes.
Which I had no idea. I didn't pick up on that until I had read that, you know, in the, I don't know where I read it, but I had read it somewhere that it was Strax. And I was like, oh, I guess now that I know it's him and I went back and rewatched it, you can see, you know, you can see it in his face that it's the same guy. But
you can see it in the teeth.
In the teeth too, yeah. But he definitely has you know, the same facial expressions and, you know, in his eyes and things like that. But I would have never recognized. I mean, he's got so much makeup on when he's Strax.
Yeah.
And apparently he's played other, what is Strax, a Sontaran or something?
Yeah, yeah. So he was in one other fact that they threw out there. He had an interview similar to Nick Frost in the Doctor Who Extra, was that this is his third Christmas special. So the first Christmas special is Matt Smith with the snowmen when he originally meets Clara. Strax is in that episode. The second one, Town Called Christmas, is when he shows up as two random Sontarans, thinking they have the invisibility cloak on when in fact they don't. And then this episode where he now shows up without any makeup on, and he was pretty excited that he is one of the first characters to have three recurring Christmas specials.
Huh. And Clara too. Clara, she was you know, she's the companion in three straight Christmas specials.
Yeah, she made it. She made it, didn't she?
You know, we keep talking about Clara, and it's like, okay, are we ready for her to go? And she's, you know, she's really not as impactful of a companion as some of the previous ones. You know, maybe Rose and Amy left more of an impression. But man, she's putting in her time, and you know, we'll find out at the end of this episode she's going to stick around for a little bit longer too. So, as much as some people don't necessarily love Jenna Coleman as a companion, apparently the producers of the show like her because they keep bringing her back.
Yeah, and I keep on being convinced that her series as a companion is going to be a short one. And look at us. We're already getting on to her third series as a companion. That's pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, so we had an appearance of another character that we thought we would never see again. Good old P.E.
Yeah.
Danny Pink. Were you surprised to see that? Danny Pink in this episode?
I was totally surprised, but in a good way. It fit with the episode. It was, in my mind, well done, and it cements even a fake Danny Pink is better than everybody else that you could possibly run across. He is the best person in the world. even when he's not real.
I'll say this. Fake Danny Pink was more interesting to me than the real Danny Pink. I think that, I don't know what it was about this episode, but him and Clara actually had a believable relationship to me.
Yeah, he was human in this episode. He was fake, but he was human.
It wasn't really Danny Pink, so maybe that would explain it. You know, his inability to be normal around Clara, and maybe because he's just a dream state, and, you know, obviously he's just a figment of Clara's imagination. So maybe it was more of an idealized version of him.
It's the Danny Pink Clara always wanted.
Right. So they had chemistry. You know, I bought it, but I had never really bought into their chemistry throughout the entire series. But in this episode, it worked.
There was so much about this episode that not only helped the series that we just came off of, but even the discussion we just had about Clara. She's a companion. She's still going to be a companion. There's so much about this episode that kind of smooths out those rough edges for me. I'm fine with her now. I don't know what it is about the episode. Everybody seemed more believable at the end of it. I don't know what it was, but it was a really... I'm fine with it. And Danny Pink, yeah, their relationship seemed legit in this episode.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was definitely... All the actors did a great job in this episode, across the board. And, Danny Pink, it was nice to see him again. Kind of a better way, I'm assuming we're not going to see him anymore. But if this is the last time we see him, I like this better than him going out, you know, as a Cyberman with a messed up face flying up into the sky and exploding.
Totally agree.
This is a better send-off for that actor.
Yeah, and... It's a better send-off between him and Clara as well. Better than the sending the mysterious little boy through the portal into her bedroom late at night and basically saying, sorry, but this is what I got to do. I liked this departure better. Even the idea of, like, give me my 5 minutes. You're allowed to miss me for 5 minutes, but the rest of the time you have to get on with your life.
I really liked his line where the doctor says, you know, Danny's dead. You know, Danny saved the world. And Danny's like, I didn't save the world. I saved Clara. The rest of you just got lucky.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, you know, that line was a good line. Now, it doesn't necessarily paint him in as noble of a light as maybe we had thought when he went out. But, you know, he was saving Clara. You know, I think the collateral of that was that, you know, obviously he would want to help other people too. But I thought it was a good line.
The trouble of that is how much was it really Danny and how much of it was Clara?
True. But I think we were supposed to see him as Danny.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He was trying to figure out how to help the doctor, you know, how do we wake her up and all this stuff, and so I was seeing it as Danny. To me, maybe Clara knows him well enough to represent him, you know, accurately, but although he was a little taller. According to the doctor, which was another good line.
Nice. Yep, totally.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of the way the story was explained and the whole dream aspect of it. You know, the idea that this is basically Inception.
Exactly.
This is Doctor Who's version of Inception, almost to a level of being too much like Inception and kind of a ripoff. Did you like that aspect of it? Were you kind of did you feel like that was a good way to tell the story, or did you feel like I've seen this before?
I liked the way that they told the story. I liked the elements that they used. That said, it definitely at the end of the day is Inception, which if I were to get nitpicky, sure, that to me is a problem. They didn't even try to hide it, really, when they a dream inside of a dream. Have you ever woken up from a dream and realized you're still dreaming? But I loved it. It worked really well. I thought it was, yeah, I have no complaints. It worked perfectly for me. How about yourself?
Yeah, I thought it worked well, too. I didn't mind that it was basically a ripoff of Inception. I don't mind seeing Doctor Who's version of, you know, some of these familiar stories. We saw him do a bank heist. It's not the first time a bank heist has ever been on TV, for sure. You know, there's been other episodes that were kind of reminiscent of things that we've seen before. So I was okay with it. And it's a cool way to, you know, keep you guessing as a viewer. Like, you know, what I'm watching, is it real? Is it not real? How early on in the episode did you kind of pick up on the fact that they were dreaming?
I picked up on that fairly quickly, just because there were four sleepers and there are four people in there. As soon as the doctor even approached the idea of a dream, it's like, okay, those four people are the same four people in there. But I didn't realize how many times they would have to wake up from the dream. I didn't realize how many dreams were actually within the dreams that they were dreaming.
Yeah, they were like four. They were like four deep, I think, four levels in.
I think the sleepers were like three, and I think Claire and the doctor were four, which I'm still trying to wrap my mind around as far as how they were in more dreams than the others, and even how they all got there in the first place. But
which, if really you want to get your head really spun around, if you think about it, the final, you know, wake up of the doctor and Clara, essentially the whole thing that happened with the people on, you know, in the space station and all that stuff, they could have all just been dreams.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe those people didn't even exist, you know. I mean, obviously the show is trying to make it seem like they did. You know, they show them all wake up in their homes, and, you know, so we're led to believe that the doctor and Clara were sharing dreams with them. But, you know, it is kind of interesting to think, oh yeah, huh, Doctor and Claire woke up at the end. Everything else could have just been a dream, and those people didn't even exist. So,
1 second, I'm checking something here real quick, because there was something that popped out to me, but I just need to make sure that it's actually his last time waking up. Where does he wake up the last time?
On the last two times he wakes up on what seems like the same planet that he was on when Claire threw the keys into the lava, but that could just be a matter of them using the same set.
So that's what I was thinking. Like, when he wakes up, he's on that same volcano lava place, waking up at that point, which just so happens to be where the dream that he put Clara in happens as well, which is really odd that they're both in like that volcano place, because that wasn't real either. That was a dream.
Right. But, yeah, so there could,
why
you
is
could
he
even get
up in a dream location.
Right. Yeah, you could even get crazier with it and say, well, you know, the doctor woke up there, so was he, you know, was anything that happened after, you know, that all a dream?
Man, he's still dreaming. He's still dreaming.
So, yeah, I was talking to my my brother-in-law when I was in Tennessee, and he actually brought this up, and then I kind of took it to a different level as we were talking. But he was saying, oh, wouldn't it be funny if the doctor, you know, took his, you know, when his dream crab thing came off his face, that it wasn't actually Capaldi, but it was Matt Smith, and Matt Smith never left, and he was dreaming that he was Capaldi. And I was like, I'll take it even further. What if the thing fell off and it was Eccleston, you know? And suddenly, like, every Doctor Who fan's mind is completely blown. You know, everything that's happened since Eccleston was all a dream, and we're starting over again with Eccleston as the Doctor.
It's a long story.
And they were, yeah, and they were all, and they were able to keep all of that a complete secret. As weird as that would have been to be like, oh wow, like all this stuff that happened with the Doctors was all just a dream, I still would have been completely on board with it. Just because it was, just because it would be such a good blindside, you know, like, oh my goodness.
And we would get, we would have somewhat better explanation for the rebooting of the entire universe.
Yeah. And the whole, like, numbering system of the War Doctor and all that stuff, you know, just, let's just start back at number nine.
let's just start over.
We're going back to number nine. He's like on the floor of the TARDIS. The crab falls off his face. It's Eccleston. He stands up. Rose is there. I mean, come on. That would be kind of cool.
Let's take it even back further, because we've been wanting to have him show up at one point or another, but the Eighth Doctor.
Yes. Have it be the Eighth Doctor. And then, I mean, even if they had done that, like, you know, at the very end of the episode, have it be like, okay, even if it was Smith or Tennant or somebody, but then have that still be a dream, and then in the end he still ends up being Capaldi. That would have been kind of a cool little you know, throwaway cameo that would have just been like had people talking, you know. Oh my gosh, you know, Tennant came back and, you know, guest starred in this, you know, I don't know. I think it could have been an interesting thing to do. When you have this type of a story element with dream crabs and anything could be a dream, it really, I mean, with Moffat as a writer, it almost makes me wonder, are we going to see these dream crabs again? Because he can pretty much do anything he wants to now.
Oh, that's the one thing that the one loose end that wasn't tied up are the dream crabs. Because, so within the dream, the Doctor's like, they've probably been around for, I don't know, years, hundreds or thousands of years or whatever he might say. And then at the end, we find out, okay, they are real, because that's what put the Doctor and Claire in the dream state to begin with. So if there's more of them, in the dreams he was acting like it's already too late, the world is over. So I'm wondering, are these things going to start popping up more and more throughout the episodes? Is this just the beginning of the dream crabs, or did there just happen to be six random dream crabs that just happened to find the Doctor and Clara?
I will say the dream crabs, to me, I was gonna say this, that I feel like they were the scariest monster, quote unquote monster, that we got all season. To me, they were the most intimidating.
I would agree. I hadn't thought of it much. They were definitely creepy.
They looked scary. They, you know, they climb on your face. The way that they're basically drilling into your brain and, like, you know, sucking out your brain as they're forcing you to dream. You know, I just the whole idea of a dream crab, I thought it was very cool. Like, I do think we'll see them again, and it does really give them, you know, a type of story element that can really allow them to cheat a lot, you know, in the future. So I think we'll see some dream crabs again.
Maybe all of series 9 is going to be we're going to see dream crabs pop up in every episode. We'll always be guessing.
Yeah, I know. Now that'll be the explanation anytime there's something they can't explain. Oh, it was, you know, there was a dream crab.
That didn't actually happen.
It was just a dream.
No continuity issues here.
The easy way to retcon anything.
Exactly.
But we did get one of my favorite things they ever do in Doctor Who, make a young actor look old. Now we've gotten Matt Smith, you know, aged up, which I thought was dumb. And then we get this whole, you know, part at the end of this episode where they do the same thing to Clara. I thought that the ending scene with the whole Clara thing and her being old and the Doctor kind of regretting, oh man, you know, I'm 60 years late and I'm so sorry. I thought that was kind of a little bit of an unnecessary part of the episode.
I was convinced it was over right there.
Like that was the end. That's how they were going to end it with Clara.
I thought the episode was over. I thought Clara was done. I thought that was the quote unquote last Christmas. I thought they were going to bring up the title one more time. Danny Pink did it in the whole dream. I thought they were going to bring it up and she was just going to say that was their last Christmas. And then we're off to find a new companion. I thought it was over. One other thing about that I thought was both touching, sweet, and very well played was the Doctor saying that he could see no difference in Clara, because the entire series 8 he's making comments about, you don't look any different, what's changed, I don't understand, and all this other stuff, or commenting on age and not being able to find out who's older, him or who looks older, him or Clara. And here we get it where, from the audience perspective, she's definitely aged, but then they do that brief second when he puts the Christmas hat on her and it's Clara. And she says, you don't see any difference. And he says, no, I've never been able to see any difference. I thought that was sweet. Just throwing it out there.
I didn't. I was kind of just thinking, he's just being nice. You know, he can see how old she looks. The whole end scene with the old Clara, and I was kind of thinking the same thing you were. Oh, no, this is the end of Clara. And they're going to do the same thing they did to Matt Smith.
Was it really an oh no, though? Were you at that moment saying, oh no, Clara's done?
No, it wasn't a matter of, like, not wanting her to be gone, because I am ready for a new companion. But the way, if that was the way that she went out, you know, like, oh, the Doctor forgot to come back for 60 years and the poor old lady was in bed and he had to go get the dream crab off her, and then he's like, "Oh crap, I'm sorry, I forgot about you for 60 years." And she's, you know, like the whole, you know, old people makeup that always looks cheesy. I don't know. I would have been like, they could have done better. It could have been a better ending. So I thought that whole scene was just a throwaway. And then they had the whole other level of the dream. And then he wakes up. He's like, oh, good. She's not really old. And then he goes and finds her. I don't know. To me, that was just like, they could have just done away with that whole ending part and just had him find her in bed, take the crab off her face, tell her the TARDIS is outside, and, you know, we're on to season 9 as her with the companion again. They could have just done that without the whole, you know, touchy-feely part at the end.
I think they really were trying to draw more of a comparison to Matt Smith's ending and kind of bookends the Claire going out the same way Matt Smith did. Because one thing that someone else mentioned was in Matt Smith's episode, when Claire finally shows back up and she finds the Doctor aged, she helps him pull that Christmas cracker to pop it open. This episode, the Doctor comes back, finds Claire, she's aged. The Doctor helps her pull a Christmas popper. So I think they really were trying to draw that like huge comparison, and in the end, convince us that Claire was going out the same way that Matt Smith went out. Old age, it's done, it's over with. So I think you're right that, albeit with the silly old people makeup, they were doing much the same thing that they did or trying to do much the same thing they did with Matt Smith.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess. And if they were going to do it that way, then I wish they would have just followed through and kind of make that really be her end. But the fact that their intention was never for that to be the ending for her, I could have done without it. But we still have Clara, season 9. You sounds like you're okay with that now. I know we had talked earlier that both of us were kind of ready for a new companion, but it sounds like you might be back on board with Clara now.
If you listen back to the previous episodes, or if you've listened to the episodes leading up to this one, you think I am one of the most fickle people when it comes to Clara ever. And you're right. I don't know whether I want her to stay or if I want her to go, but after this last episode, there seems to be a newfound excitement between the Doctor and Clara. Clara wants to be there. She's kind of come to grips with what happened to Danny. She's excited about the TARDIS. The Doctor has come to accept that he wants Clara there. I'm hoping that all the relational struggles that we had in Series 8, albeit some of them were really fun to watch, Series 9, those will be behind, and it's going to be a lot less drama and a lot more adventures. So yeah, I'm cool with it. I'm ready to give it a go. Now if she disappears halfway through Series 9, am I going to be heartbroken? Depending on how she goes out, my heart might break, but I probably won't be heartbroken if we get a new companion.
Yeah, I think Clara sans Danny Pink will be much more interesting to watch. I think the relationship with Danny and the whole triangle thing that was going on with the Doctor, and them, everybody was lying to each other, and Danny's always, you know, sitting at home by himself, and Clara's just basically being the worst girlfriend in the world, that really soured me on that character. But now that he's gone, and you know, she'll be on the TARDIS with the Doctor and kind of without that third person hanging around, I think it'll be more interesting. Yeah, so we'll see.
Whoa.
What?
So, back to the dream crabs. Missy could not be dead because of a dream crab. Danny Pink could not be dead because of a dream crab. And we could have everybody else showing back up for Series 9 without any troubles.
So, explain to me how Danny Pink wouldn't be dead.
So, we could just explain it with a dream crab. That's my explanation.
Oh, okay. I thought you had like a specific moment that, you know, because the Doctor, when he wakes up on that lava planet, at that point, Danny's already dead. Right. Although I guess he would come back as a Cyberman, so we could still have Danny Cyberman. But no, I think everything that we've seen happened so far, I think has happened. I think the explanation for the master coming back will be kind of like what we were talking about before.
Right.
You know, she somehow survived, and that's pretty much all we'll, you know, all we'll hear. They probably won't give us more of a detailed explanation than that, but yeah. I have a prediction, though, for Clara.
Bring it.
I don't think she makes it to her fourth Christmas special. I do think that we'll get kind of a similar situation with what happened with Amy and Rory, that she'll be kind of a half-season companion here in season 9, and then we'll get the transition to a new companion sometime during season 9 and not at the end of season 9.
Okay, so we're going on record right now. Okay, you don't think she's making it through the season. Give me an episode number.
I'm going to say halfway point. So the season, you know how they kind of do the mid-season finale?
Yeah.
And it will be very similar to what happened with Amy and Rory. They'll build up to it. They'll have a big mid-season finale, and then Clara will leave, and we'll get a new companion second half of the season. So whatever that midway point is, episode 7, episode 8, episode 6, whatever the midway point is.
We need a number. Need a number.
I don't know how many episodes there are yet. I'll say episode 7.
Okay.
I think that's when it happened with Amy and Rory.
Okay.
So, yep, that's my prediction. My bold prediction. Usually I'm wrong on these things, but
it's recorded in episode 30.
And the good thing about podcasting, people rarely go back and listen to old episodes.
Right.
But anything else in this episode that you wanted to point out? Anything we missed? I know we had the appearance of Michael Troughton.
Yep.
Who is the son of the actor who played the second Doctor.
Yep. So that was a fun Easter egg thrown in there. Outside of that, though, just a really, really solid episode. Really enjoyed it from start to finish. I feel like we got a lot of Doctor Who quips just thrown in there, mostly from Santa Claus, which was odd, but even from just the interaction between the Doctor and the rest of the scientists, where Michael Troughton refers to the face hug or the dream crabs as being like face huggers from Alien, and the Doctor being like you have a movie just called Alien where they do stuff, no wonder people keep trying to invade your planet. Just different things like that.
Yeah, that's offensive, I think is what he said.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the episode from start to finish. Taking a step back. The one part that I didn't enjoy was Doctor driving a sleigh. I just shook my head at that part.
That was similar.
I couldn't believe his boyish enthusiasm about, hey look, I'm driving a sleigh.
Yeah, that was a bit out of character. That was a Matt Smith moment, in my opinion. I can totally see Matt Smith doing that. To see Capaldi do it seemed way out of character.
Yeah.
But that's just, hey, it's proof. Matt Smith is lurking in there somewhere in that Doctor personality.
And in dreams, you never know what happens.
Yes, yeah. He was still dreaming, so he can definitely not be himself if he wants to be. But yeah, that was another moment for me. Kind of what happened at the beginning where, you know, they break through the wall and all that stuff that I was complaining about. That I had the same kind of eye roll at this moment too. But I'm on board with you on the rest of the episode. I was really impressed with it. I really enjoyed it. I actually watched this episode 3 times. And I think Nick Frost maybe actually kind of... He might have overshadowed the Doctor a little bit in this one. I think he might have outplayed Peter Capaldi and kind of was the star of this episode.
Yeah, this Christmas special might be my Christmas special to go to if future Christmas specials lack a certain excitement.
Yep. So, all right, well, are we ready to wrap this episode up?
Let's wrap.
All right, well, as always, thank you for listening to this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. You can leave us a review on iTunes. If you like what you hear, please go over to iTunes, check us out, search for our name there. We're the ones with the black and white logo. And leave us a nice 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, search for us, Bad Wolf Radio, and you can just send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time.